Welcome to the Indian Silicon Valley podcast. I'm your host, Jivraj, and on this podcast, I speak with founders, investors, and domain experts from the Indian Valley, trying to understand the art of building a legendary company. In this episode, I speak with Asad Khan, co-founder and CEO of Lambda Test. Asad is one of the most fascinating founders I've had on the show, as he exhibits the founder experience both from a bootstrap mindset, having built a multi-billion dollar services business, and the venture mindset, building a global product giant currently. Lambda Test is working towards becoming the AWS of testers, covering more than a million developers and 500 enterprises currently. They are one of the most disruptive dev tools company being built from India for the world. Considering the innovative nature of what Asad is building and the massive scope ahead, I tried to be mindful of the insights we could derive from this journey. Through the episode, we focus on tactical aspects around hiring senior leaders, looking out for great talent, the importance of storytelling internally at a growth-oriented, fast-moving company, GTM strategies that worked and that did not, and we try to uncover how Lambda Test got here. I thoroughly enjoyed Asad's insights on the show and strongly recommend sticking around till the end for a very unique conversation. But before we get started, here is a quick word on our sponsor for the episode. This episode of the Indian Silicon Valley podcast is presented by Stride Ventures, which is one of India's leading venture debt funds, becoming synonymous with innovative startup financing in India. Stride Ventures provides comprehensive solutions going beyond venture debt to cater to distinctive challenges faced by high growth and inherently strong businesses backed by leading institutions. The fund has a portfolio of over 60 plus diversified companies, having deployed more than 1,500 crore rupees to date. In just over 2 years, Stride Ventures has emerged as the preferred venture debt lender in the Indian ecosystem. To know more about this phenomenal fund, visit strideventures.in. That is spelled as STRIDEVENTURES.IN. And with that, let's dive in to the 132nd episode of the Indian Silicon Valley podcast with Asad of Lambda Test. Thank you so much, Asad, for joining me. Incredibly delighted to be hosting you today.
Thanks for having me, Jivraj, today. Thank you.
Awesome. This has been a long time coming, but I'm really fascinated by what you're building with Lambda Test and what the broader team is working towards. We were briefly discussing the mission that you have of enabling the software development journey for developers from India to build global companies. And we want to uncover much of how you built Lambda Test and your personal journey. But to get us started, I think what's very fascinating is that before your stint with Lambda Test that continues, you have built a company in the services space in a similar sector where it was used for testing, right? And before that, you've had instances with a technology and this space that have shaped your thought process. If you can just give the audience more context around what has this journey been like? How did you get fascinated by the idea of entrepreneurship, your first business venture in the services space? I think that would be a great conversation starter.
Sure, Jivraj. I started my career working with a product engineering company called GlobalLogic. I worked with them like 4 or 5 years, helping their product companies in Bay Area mostly. And I was busy working with the fintech product company in Bay Area, helping them on the quality assurance side, and then moved into business analysis, doing some pre-sales for them. Their customers were mostly top-tier banks like Bacovia, PNC, US Trust, and Bank of America. There, it was a lot of learning working with the product team, how the core engineering and the professional services works. Back then, the enterprise software was mostly being shipped like in the distro and CDs, talking about 2004 and onwards to 2009. And mostly enterprise software, you needed a lot of foot on the ground. You needed a lot of network, referrals. That's how the sale used to happen, right? And the ticket size of that software was quite big, starts from $3 million, goes up to $100 million deals. But 2010 onwards, the trend started shifting towards the cloud. That's how it moved very fast. Before I go into that, I left GlobalLogic in 2010 and started an independent, pure play, boutique testing services company. And the focus was right from the beginning, the focus was to help the product companies in Bay Area and Central Europe market and set up their quality engineering lab right here in Noida. That's my hometown. And started building their Selenium automation lab and performance engineering as well as mobile automation. We scaled that company from zero to 250 FTEs on board, around $5-6 million in revenue. Bootstrap, business development and strategy were being handled by me. Right from here, we had a very good account from starting from $250,000 to $500,000 to $1 million. We never had a foot on the ground. So that gave me the opportunity to learn that how to crack the bigger deals on the phone as well, right? So, but I was not involved into engineering. My partner was involved. We got acquired in early 2015. And after helping them in a year and a half, I had an exit in 2017. The idea about Lambda Test started shaping up when I was doing my last company, because we were doing a lot of automation for our customers. And the question was, how this space looks like after 15 years from here? The answer was that, do we have enough tooling in this space? Or we're struggling? Do the couple of products that they have fulfill the demand? Are innovating enough? Or if not, what could be done? That were the open questions, right? We started pursuing, and 2017, we decided that we want to build it.
Interesting. No, that's awesome to hear. I think after that stint, taking that, again, bold decision to go into the same space, but with a different approach, with a productized one, and backing yourself with that belief for the audacious vision of, how you call it, building the AWS for testers, if I'm not wrong. And that's what Lambda Test is setting out to achieve. For more context, I understand this is a testing platform for developers on the broad basis of it, for those who do not know much. But if you can maybe share more around, you know, the 0 to 1 journey of Lambda Test, giving us some context of what the realm of opportunity it covers and where has it headed, especially with context to the initial journey, I think that'll be very helpful, Asad.
0 to 1 was very confusing, Jibraj. I'll be very honest. When we started, there were low-hanging fruits were available in the market, mostly in the browser and app testing market. And we started in the similar market. We started selling it. But the question was, can you keep selling this product for next 15 years? Answer was no. So what you're doing, can it exist for next 20 years? Are you building for next 20 years? So the answer was clear, no. So who's going to tell you what to build? That was the biggest problem. I mean, no advisor or no investor or no founder can figure out by themselves that what has to be built for next 20 years, actually. It's only customers. Our customers started telling us, and I was quite focused on it, pushed team very hard, that guys, we have to listen to them. I mean, every small and big information has to be captured. And I knew that if I leave to the team, we might lose it. We might skip it. So I taken it in my hand. And this is where shifting from services company to product company, the biggest challenge was that I myself actually transformed into product guy. I was doing business development, unlearning and learning again, every bit and pieces, and listening to the customer and figuring out, because I come from landscape, so I can connect faster with the use case than my team who's getting on board and they learn the landscape and the domain for next 2 years, you might lose a lot of things. So I started working myself on all these use cases which are coming from customers actually. But 2019 December, we clearly found that what we have to build for very long term, that each and every digital test in this digital economy in the long term has to be tested on Lambda Test. That's a very long-term goal. I mean, people can call you AWS of testers. They might call you something else, but the final show is that, are you running each and every test of digital economy? Whether it's running on web or mobile or IoT or Metaverse, anything you want, right? So that's where you want to go. And in very long term, people are writing a lot of tests. So when you write a lot of code, it's a tech debt. When you're writing a lot of tests, then it's test debt. So imagine after 10 years, you're working on the same suite and you actually bloated it, where 40-50% of the tests are not useful anymore. How the team will look like, how the execution will look like, will you run those tests forever? Or you need a smart system which can tell you that these are dirty tasks, test that it's there. Massively evolved system and platform needed in this market. We started inching towards that goal, actually. And we shipped our flagship product in this year, January, called HyperExecute, which is like transition from Amazon EC2 to Kubernetes. So imagine you were doing the engineering on a lot of engineering on EC2, and then Kubernetes came and a lot of things offloaded that can be self auto scale, self-healing, a lot of things can be taken care of by Kubernetes itself. That's where our shift happened in the last 4 years. I think we are a little odd company who invested into engineering very heavily. In general, when you are into 0 to 1 journey, it's like more product, and then 1 to 10 is sell. But our focus on the engineering never went down. We kept investing massively. Our 75% of investment went into engineering. You got to build it for very long term. So you have to get ready for the scale. And also multiple product lines on one platform, building it in the highest level of quality, giving the experience to the customer that they can love was challenging. But somehow this is also getting true that my team, our engineers are doing this right here in Noida. That we are simply super proud of.
Phenomenal. I think to know the transformation from what it started to what it has become and where it is headed, and for you to continuously emphasize on the long term, building for the 15-year mark, is very, very interesting, because I don't think there is, I mean, I'm sure the best founders have that clarity, but to know that from the outside feels a little, you know, less believable. But for you to reiterate it makes a lot of sense. And I think this is very, very fascinating. Very, very interestingly, Asad, talk to us about how did you have this intellectual honesty, right? Like, was it very simple for you to ask yourself that this is not the long term, this will not work out? How were you continuously focused on that long term aspect? Because initially it becomes about survival, right? You want to do anything that clicks because that becomes the nature for so much of what lies ahead. But talk to us about what was going inside your head at that time, and how did you figure this part out?
There was always 2 tracks: short term to keep the show running, and deploy your workforce on the long term only you have belief in. So I'll tell you that there are a lot of factors involved when you build something. Right? Board members, you have investors, you have prospects coming in, customers, you have team members, and your job is to keep telling the stories in different manner, that someone has a fit of story that they want to listen, you can keep telling them. But ultimate goal is, yeah, you need a razor sharp focus that how the short term and long term will go hand in hand. If you lost the focus on the long term on scale, get ready for disruption. Another lambda test is coming out and the cycle is shrinking. 20 years to 10 years now, it's coming to 5 years. All of us are disruptible. I mean, people will come after to us. If you're not innovating enough, there will be always 2 track in lambda test. It is never ending, the current and the future. So if you look at the Datadog or Splunk or you see Snowflake, I mean, there's continuous innovation every day. You cannot stay in the market for 30 years if you're not innovating enough. And that is not an overnight job. It's a culture. It's a culture and your belief. I'm okay to grow 60-70% year on year than 100%, but not at the cost of not innovating enough. You also have to see that, will you grow in the same pace after 5 years? Answer is different. So all these things come when you're working on strategy, working in the shaping of the future, how it will look like. You cannot decide, customer decides. You go 1,000 times to your customers and telling them that, this, do you like this? Is it useful enough? Is the user is coming right? I mean, all the metrics that you're tracking right now looks promising. Keep building, keep asking.
This is brilliant. I think this goes to a lot of the fundamentals that we hear, right? You have to think long-term. You have to think about sustainable growth rates, not just growth rates in the short run. And I think the most common asked question for me on the show is, how do you as a founder map the short term and the long term? And I think you answered it perfectly well there. It has to be a continued focus. Asad, tell us, how do you engrave this culture within the team? Because I understand why you have it. You're passionate about it. You're able to look at the a bigger picture, right? But in the day-to-day, it becomes very easy to kind of just like miss the longer term picture, right? How do you engrave this within the team and ensure that this is a culture-wide analysis, not just a one-person mindset?
So 2-3 things are my daily job. This is like, you cannot take this away from me. Every day's job. I just have to talk with my team, some of them, on many different topics. Just keep talking about it. Tell them the stories continuously. Keep telling them. Keep repeating it. Until unless either they're fully disconnected and they leave or they buy it. Also, you also sharp your strategy, because you, when they're interested, they're telling you a lot of things that you're not aware about. So this culture is massive in Lambda Test. I keep talking. I spend an hour and a half or 2 hours every day randomly talking to my team. What is next? What is going on? What we have in the next 4 quarters? Or can we try? Are we trying enough? So you got to cross the red line almost every month that it is doable. If it is not doable, that's an opportunity for us. So it's just a perception. If you keep telling them story, that the biggest problem that you are facing right now is the massive opportunity. We just have to tune it that the market is large enough for it or not. That's it. Second thing, I keep doing it even so far, even you are hiring intern, he has to talk to me. I cannot let it go, because that is the entry point where I'll fail. And third thing is, you got to interact with a lot of people to figure it out that how other founders are shaping up the strategy. There's a lot of learning out. And definitely you have to, if you're not emulating, maybe you can get some inspiration to sharpen your strategy. So hiring and telling them the story every day, almost every month, every week, repeating it many times, telling them what is opportunity. I mean, sometimes I mean, people might take it in joke, but I said, the line you're writing will become immortal. Code you're writing will become immortal. I mean, can you believe in that? If you don't believe in that, you're not crazy enough to go in that.
This is phenomenal, Asad. I think I love the emphasis on the things that really matter in the long run. So overemphasis, telling stories, communicating, hiring. I think these are all brilliant, not just pointers, but the way you've exhibited, you practice them, are like amazing points to note. And I think it'll be very helpful for founders. The other aspect is, you know, taking a segue to the business side of things, right? I was reading numbers and...
I'll interrupt you a few seconds. When I was starting my flagship product called HyperExecute, opportunity to think about that product was available to the whole team. But I just needed one guy to be sold on that story. The guy who was sold on that story did some progress is my third co-founder right now. I promoted him as a co-founder because of that's his baby actually. He innovated enough and he believed in the product from the day one. We promoted him last year. You just need one person who can connect with the future the way you are connecting, and there's he or she is sold on the future. That was my first success when he started progressing a little bit. And there were almost 100 engineers in the team.
Tell us more. Tell us what that means, right? Like, how do you evaluate for founder mindset to the extent that after somebody has been a team member, you elevate them to a co-founder role because they've exhibited these qualities? What were some of the other signals that convinced you that this ought to happen?
The very first thing was, is your accountability is deeper than me or higher than me? Is this something that you bleed for? The very first thing. Are you signing up for the long-term commitment the way I signed it up? And third thing is that the moment you start talking in my language, actually, the language I speak, can you storify the future in the same manner I'm doing right now? Can you sell it to your team members? And third thing, obviously, I mean, all other things that your hard work, your punctuality, we sacrifice a lot every day. So not everything you'll get it that you want if you're signing up with a founder. So these are the three things that I actually tabled it to the board. And Harsh asked me that, I mean, does he believe into that he's signing up for a very long term? I said, more than me. and that's how we promoted him. Yeah.
That's brilliant. I think accountability and commitment. Now, from the outside, it looks like, how did this happen? But it's lovely to, I think, this is the first time on this show where I'm hearing this story like this. And I think goes to show that the founder mindset can be inculcated, right? I mean, it needs to be there organically. And then once it shows, it pays dividends as well, right? Like the right people will see it and the trajectories will follow. But this is phenomenal. Thanks for sharing that. I think, Asad, this is going to be an interesting one. But I was trying to understand more around, you know, let's say the business side. We've spoken a bit about the people side. We've spoken a bit about the platform now. But I think 500 plus enterprises, more than 1 million developers using the platform right now, if I have my numbers correct. Talk to us about what the journey in terms of just being, you know, selling to enterprises has taught in terms of learnings. And also when you are building a product for developers at scale, what are the learnings? How do you ensure that, you know, this becomes almost like a daily part of their lives in terms of the experience elevation, right? So if you can share thoughts there, I think that'll be very helpful.
So when you're building a dev tool specifically, we learn that you should invest massively into engineering. You cannot compromise. Because your customers are super smart. They onboard very fast and they leave very fast. Experience is everything. Did you add the value? And did you add the value in the fastest manner? They'll buy. If they're talking about your product that this is not right or that is not right, they're making so much noises, it means they love the product. It means they really want you to fix the product. Don't get afraid when they open thousands of tickets for you. So it is challenging when you're building dev tool, but it is also mind-blowing journey. I mean, you are working with the smartest ICP in the world. The brilliant brains are buying. And for initially, they'll buy. I mean, SMBs will buy, individuals will buy, and they are enough to tell you what to build. The moment you grow your install base into SMBs and mid-market or maybe individuals, someone from enterprise will come out of the box. That company will tell you what you have missing in the enterprise. That point of time, you should check your runway. You should check your team capacity. You should also check everything is okay to start. Then probably you can start doing enterprise. There's no playbook. Someone told me that you should not start unless you are 30 million revenue company. Someone told me that you cannot sell if you are less than $5 million account. My experience says so far, start anytime when you're ready. There's no playbook. And in technology, probably playbooks are getting obsolete almost every 6 months or month or a year. Things are changing so fast. What I'm telling you is not a playbook for our audience. It's just that how we did it.
Absolutely. I think I love the fact that you can't take learnings without context. And this is personal to what Lambda Test went through. Any things in terms of like mistakes to avoid when, you know, one of them was, of course, feedback, right? Listen to feedback, don't ignore it. But anything else when, you know, setting up that initial sales channel, what should you not do? More importantly, because I think there's a lot of commonality in negatives.
In GTM, it depends on the product by product and your market size. If you are in the $100 billion market, probably you can go clearly focus on the product-led growth. But if you are, and that's our learning, I'm not saying this is right or wrong. I mean, not a playbook at all. I'll keep repeating it. So we believe that if it's a larger market, the product-led growth is actually the right approach to go after content, community distribution. But if it is $5 billion market or less, your PLG will stagnate after some time. It will not be forever. So then you need a hybrid go-to-market. But it doesn't happen overnight. You started with the product-led growth. You started getting some install base. And you started getting some traction, which actually got you PMF. PMF for SMBs and mid-market, and the enterprise started kicking in. Then you actually got some PMF for some enterprises. Then you start setting up your sales arc. And the R starts from the inside sales. If you're a PLG company, then probably starts from inside sales. But at the same time, not many companies, even we failed 2 times for setting up the outbound motion. We failed almost 3 times. And my partner is a hawk salesperson. I mean, Jay, when you interact, you will figure it out that it's a cutthroat salesperson. And we failed together for 3 times. But 4th time, we got success. So another GTM motion kicked in that outbound started contributing. We thought it will work in the same manner the services outbound worked, actually. The classic mistake that was supposed to happen. But we realized very quickly that it's not a services outbound. It's a product outbound.
What was the difference, I mean, for the audience side? Maybe just a couple of strategic things.
The hiring and the enablement was the mistake. The biggest mistake. Enablement was not enough. And also targeting was not enough. Was not right. So you started fishing in the pond. It will not work. Then we narrowed down the focus and we started getting some traction. It was not immediate. It taken a lot of time. So enabling one channel after another worked with us so far. This year we thought that how to go top of the pyramid and go after that no testing company has gone there and opened up the very top of the pyramid, like people who want to buy on-prem solutions. I come from a product engineering background where actually I have seen how the professional services and the core engineering works together. Right? I have seen that if your core product is like maybe $1 million, then you are doing around 500,000 professional services business as well. It used to be a trend 15 years back. But now most of the dev tools, we are selling licenses. So our PLG motion was set. It is working nicely. You have massive funnel coming in. But at the same time, we started doubling down from top down. Then it completes the band. And I started looking after that, how these 4 or 5 funnels will look like after 48 months. So it matched my number, what I was having in my mind. Because none of these funnels will grow overnight. You have to grow 60% on the scale. You cannot do it overnight. You have to prepare actually 36 months before or 48 months before. So in the top level, we picked 5 funnels, which we started growing. And we see that it will keep growing because of these reasons. And we should have 5 funnels after 48 months so that you're not facing any issue to grow enough at the scale.
This is, again, I think, very, very thoughtful. Talk to us about the org design in such a case, right? So you've already mentioned that there was a lot of focus on product engineering, right? So product engineers, there were a bunch. But you're also talking about setting a very, very advanced or forward-looking process for sales and ensuring your GTM is in line. How do you break down some of these aspects within the organization? What is a focal area 3 years back? What is it right now? What is the split like? If you can maybe take us through that trajectory, any experienced founders listening in can maybe take cues from that.
So we actually started building pods, product-wise pods, where DevOps, front-end, design, back-end, and product managers comes in one pod, one product line, right? And then you have customer engineering associated with these pods. On one level up, there is a pre-sales and solutioning. Yeah, that goes across the products. And then you have a sales org. GTM for us is not a demand gen. I mean, marketing is not for us is not a demand gen. We added BDR into sales team, not in the marketing team. I heard that enterprise software companies, they have BDR into marketing function. We actually taken the little odd approach. It is working closely in the sales team. But our marketing team has a 2 different part, product-led growth and enterprise market. And brand is one band, actually. I mean, across, right? So product-led growth is all about content, community, evangelism, and enterprise is more about ABM, paid marketing, thought leadership, a lot of case studies, gated content, all these are coming. On sales side, you have for inbound, you have inside sales funnel that signups are coming and they're going after. You have account management team, they go after the existing install base. And then you have SDR team, which are going after actually smaller ticket size, inbound funnel. For outbound, we have a different account executives. For inbound, we have a different account executives. And there is another funnel, which we started believing in this year, is partner funnel. we started investing massively into partners and getting some results. I'll be honest. Since Manish joined us, he started taking care of that. He's taking care of the whole GTM right now, but more focus on that side.
That's phenomenal. I think that's as strategic as it gets. Thanks for sharing how you've, you know, gone about the org design there. But the ancillary question, and you know, to complete the circle, is the hiring part. And you mentioned Manish, that was one of the key hires, you know, that made a lot of noise in the ecosystem. And similarly, I'm guessing you've been very thoughtful about whom to add to the company at which point and how that can elevate it to the next level. Any cues? You mentioned, you know, founder traits as well. After the elevation of one of the co-founders now. But what do you, in a higher look at, right? Now you've gone through these 10, 12 years of building a services company, now product company. What do you look for? What are traits that you can highlight? I don't want to keep it very high level, but more importantly, just want to understand how you evaluate people to understand that this is really a long-term player.
I mean, all of us learn actually from failure, right? In the last 5 years, we also did a lot of mistakes in the hiring, but you learn. For leadership hiring, if you are interested in hearing about leadership hiring, we invest a lot. We invest a lot of time. I would say our leadership hiring is mostly coming through our advisory. We work with them before we onboard them. It's good for both of us. I mean, someone is coming to you, leaving a lot of things, who are right. You carry the responsibility for his or her success as well. You just cannot go and offer someone if you're not prepared. So bringing the leadership, I believe so far, what I learned that it's a huge responsibility for their success. You got to invest before offer and after offer. Of course, you have to be super aligned for their success. But even before offer, at least a year I need before I decide for you. And we onboarded Shri Priya Kalyana Sundaram. She is working very closely with me in my office. She ran the testing practice for 30 years in Cognizant and 3 years in UiPath, then Deloitte strategy. We knew, we spent a lot of time before we said yes. And the same thing is happening with the other leadership that we are looking upon right now. We prefer to go through advisory route actually.
That's brilliant. I think goes to show that you have to, there's no alternative to spending time, effort, and investing truly in hiring the next set of leaders for the company. I think the emphasis on this has been very clear since you've like spoken. And I think that's a very, very important mark. Like you just think like 5 steps ahead, not just like 1 step ahead.
Damage is huge, both sides. Someone is at the leadership stage. If someone decides to join you, their credibility is also on the stake. So they are giving you everything what you want. At the same time, if they fail here, the company loses a lot of time. Your tenure for the success gets longer and longer if you make more mistakes, right? So I involve my board, I involve my team. I mean, you have to go through and talk to everyone almost. I mean, do you feel home? That is the first thing. And do you feel home, and did you start getting crazy in the same manner that you see us? Yeah. So if the vibe starts coming in, I mean, then we go deeper.
Got it. I said the other thing in company building that Lambda Test has done well, at least from the external standpoint, is have a very interesting set of investors, and you've had multiple funding rounds in the last couple of months, right? I think 24 months. Talk to us about when looking at long-term partners from an external standpoint, right? People who will not be involved in the day-to-day, but they will be involved in setting the trajectory of the company comes into picture, be it advisors, be it your support system, be it your board members or investors. What is your mind space or framework to choose them, if at all? Or what do you look for in that set of people?
I mean, I will mostly, we our so far in last 5 years, whatever the rounds happen over here and the partners we have, most of the time we have seen the partner who went deeper into the product and landscape instead of financials, they were better aligned at. And because then you can understand our language easily. Product and landscape are super important for us to choose the partner. Or you're only financials partner, then probably you don't care about then other things at all. Then we might think about it as well. But in between doesn't work. I mean, like mix in between of the product and financials, and you're not here or there, it doesn't work.
Got it. So understanding language, I think that's a key way to put it. I think I really like that. But no, this has been great. I think we've covered a wide spectrum of things when it comes to the Lambda test building journey. As we go to the concluding parts of the conversation, Asad, I'd love to understand that as an individual, how have you perhaps grown through this journey? We can see the scale at which Lambda Test is your previous company got sold for, etc. But what are the different things that the founder journey has taught you personally? How have you scaled through these years? I think that'd be an interesting thing to note.
I have seen the massive change in me in the last 5 years. I'll be super honest over here. In the last 5 years, it is upside down. And where I learned from is my team and my customers. They changed me 180 degrees, I'll tell you. The patience, that not to get overwhelmed, think long term, how to manage the short term opportunities and other things. Everything, actually, there were only two segments that I was learning from is customer as well as my team members. Whenever they said, can we look upon this? There was always some answer over there. So the product mindset, the PMF that you see setting up the org or hiring people, what do we need and how much aggression is required? Too much aggression or balanced aggression? Do you really see the situation where actually you are becoming unnecessarily aggressive or aggressive enough? All these things are super important and you cannot learn from anyone else than your team. They make you a better founder. So, of course, in the last 5 years, what I learned, I didn't learn in my whole career. And the full credit to the team as well as my customers, of course, advisors and my partners as well. All my partners, they helped me a lot. If you talk about, we have Harsh from Sequoia, we have Rajul was my boss and my founder in GlobalLogic as well as my investor. I can call him 3 a.m. in the morning. He picks my... And when I'm at the stage of 0 to 1, that I cannot take decision. Then he is the person who tells me simple math, why we should choose 0 or why we should choose 1. And we have Atul from Premji. We have Bloom Ventures as well, Karthik and Sanjay. Definitely all of them add some sort of value at some stage.
Of course, I can imagine. It's amazing to know that the transformation has been high, and it's just amazing the pace at which founders learn and just evolve. And one question I really like asking founders, and I'd love to understand from you, is that it's such a fast moving environment to be a founder CEO, right? You have to manage, you have to do, and you have to look at the bigger picture while absorbing new trends, new learnings, and reflect. Do you have a method to this madness? Because I often find it very challenging to understand which part to, overemphasize on. Is it the reflection? Is it the new experiences? Is it the doing? Anything that you can share on that front?
I don't have any algorithm or playbook to manage it. But yes, what I did in the last 2-3 years that I offloaded myself a lot, giving a lot of liberty to my team members, help them to find a lot of time for myself to figure out what Lambda Test will look like after 48 months or how Lambda Test will look like after 10 years. What's going on in the market? Where things are missing, where we can have a top view, because everyone is looking at the horizontal. To go on the top view, you have to offload yourself a little bit. So when you offload it yourself, it means it is directly connected to how much you give the liberty to your team members. A lot of freedom with definitive accountability as well. Like I have checks. I will ask questions. I'll never stop asking questions. But it doesn't mean that you are not getting enough liberty. You are investing massively in your failure. But we want you to take the accountability. You have to take the calls, enough calls, so that I can spend my time somewhere else where I can tell you something that what you're missing. There is always horizontal view as well as top view. So I definitely go and see how the things looks like from the top view.
Awesome. I think that says, right, like leaders should look at the high leverage things, as they say. And I think that just attests to it. And offloading, that's an important skill. I think it comes with time, but lovely to hear that.
Yeah. nothing is playbook. That I learned. Every business is unique. Every founder is unique. They always build templates, playbooks by themselves for their businesses. I learned in the last 5 years that there's no playbook. There's no one rule, rules all.
Absolutely. No, I completely agree. And the hope with the podcast is also to just bring more perspectives on the table and ensure that you know everything, but apply the things that work for you, not just copy anything. So I think that's lovely to mention. I think this has been great. But for the second last question, I think the other objective of the podcast is not to paint the founder story as one which is very glorified, right? It is not the easiest journey by any stretch of the word. So if you can maybe, again, I don't want to be stereotypical, but any challenges along the way, times when, you know, things were not going your way or the way you thought they would, but you still were so mission-oriented that you kept going?
There is not too many examples right now, but yes, I mean, there was one product line that we were going very deep. And after spending a year, we figured out that this will not go solo. We are just wasting our time. And we found quickly through our customer that it's too early to build. So that was also a learning that if you are building something very unique ahead of the time, not selling fast enough, that will also not help. Building at the right time with the right market is actually the thing that every founder should. I mean, at least I learned that I should look for. And mistakes in the initial team, definitely. The first team that you're assembling, just don't rush. It's a massive loss. You lose a lot of staff, equity, time, everything. I mean, it massively hurts. The first team that you're building is definitely game changing. I burned my hands because I was coming from services background, never had the people in the product team. It taken me a year and a half to learn that what is the pattern. I mean, what kind of people we need? It cost you a lot of money.
Got it. No, that's very honest of you to mention. Thanks for that. For the last question, and I would love to understand from you how the forward-looking mindset for LambdaTest is looking like, because you mentioned this, of course, a bunch of times, and the vision that you have, right? Being the platform for every digital test in the world eventually. That's the North Star. How do you look at the next couple of years from a forward-looking lens? If you can talk about the mission that keeps you going to date every day, that gets you out of bed with the same amount of energy and more, I think that'll just end this conversation on a very refreshing note.
Our theme for continuous innovation will keep going on. It's never ending, and have sustainable growth. These two themes on the high level will be continuously working on. Also, looking at the trends, I mean, things in the tech is changing very rapidly right now. I mean, you and me are watching. I mean, everybody is seeing right now. Just keep eyes open on everywhere. You never know where things start changing for you, actually. Right. So keeping the tab on the market trends, that how things are changing in your landscape and other landscape, and keep listening to your customer, go more closer to your customer when the market is in tough situation. So customer will keep telling you that what's next, actually. I mean, we'll not leave. Why I'm very confident on this? Because I myself will not leave these two things ever. You can't take these two things out from me. And I understood it.
And that's the superpower. No, that's brilliant. I think continuous innovation at a sustainable growth rate, keeping up with market trends and listening to the consumer closely is the final narrative. Thank you so much, Asad, for a wonderful conversation. I have thoroughly enjoyed how thoughtful you have been about the long-term journey of building a company, and goes to show much of why LambdaTest as a team has been successful and the audacious vision you're going after. And I'm sure everyone listening would have a great couple of learnings to take back. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, Jivraj. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Awesome. With that, we come to the end of this conversation. Thank you so much for tuning into the episode. I really hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. If you're finding value with the podcast, do follow it on the audio streaming platform of your choice, drop in a review, and subscribe to our WhatsApp newsletter to get all the updates directly on your inbox. Thanks again. I will see you next week for another episode. Till then, I hope you recall. If you never try, you'll never know. Stay tuned and keep building.